You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org. You're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our guests today are the state senators who serve most of the people in our listening area. With us this morning are State Senator Van Wangard from District 21 and State Senator Bob Wirch from District 22. But we're going to start with Senator Wangard. Good morning, Senator Wangard. How are you today?
Good morning.
I might note that we're recording this on Wednesday, May 12th, as events will be unfolding. This part of the interview is being done on Wednesday. State Senator Wangard, do you want to briefly remind us what are the boundaries, roughly, of your State Senate District 21, sir?
Sure. The 21st District actually runs from the city of Kenosha west boundary all the way west to Walworth County, and then from the Illinois state line all the way up to the Milwaukee County line, and includes all of Pleasant Prairie. There's a little bit around Wheatland that is not in the district, but then it goes north up into Racine County, and I have the west side and the north side of the city of Racine, all the way up to Milwaukee County line, and then from the lake in Wind Point all the way west to Walworth County again.
It gives you a lot of territory to cover when you're campaigning, doesn't it?
Pretty good size area. Not as bad as some of my colleagues up north, though. They have sometimes, you know, six or seven counties that they're traveling across.
Let's start out with talking about the big issues that are before the Senate now and your committee, and the budget. There's the election, there's the redistricting, there's public safety, there's policing, and I want to get into those with you, sir, and find out what's going on and how your position as the Republican representing them in the state Senate, how your positions are going to be helpful to the people in your district, because that's what they want to hear, of course. But I think we were talking just before we started the recording about how difficult it is to drive from here to there and how glad we weren't driving to conduct this interview. Do you want to talk a little bit about road construction and how people can find their way to get around this summer?
Sure. And, you know, this is one thing that we're getting a lot of calls in the office about. We have construction everywhere, and, of course, we're going to get into that time again with the nicer weather. So be prepared. Leave early for appointments when you got to be someplace. Make sure you know your route. And if you have issues with not understanding where the construction is going to be as they move along with, like, Highway 50 is going to be majorly under construction this summer throughout the city and county of Kenosha, and we have it up here in Highway 20 and 11. It's happening up in this area of the district. So you can go on the Division of Motor Vehicles on the Department of Transportation website, and you can actually see the areas that are going to be under construction and where they're at in the process. So I would encourage everybody to do that, and they can also click on our legislative websites, and it'll take them over to that area, too.
That's really smart, and that's a really terrific website. I use it, and you don't tell me about Highway 50. I live a block off of it, and I have to go to Sturtevant to get to the other side of Kenosha, but it's okay.
Yes.
Now, let's talk about the budget. We've seen some headlines recently, one from the Wisconsin Public Radio Online: Republicans cut hundreds of proposals, billions of dollars from Evers' budget. And from the Kenosha News: Republicans strike nearly 400 items from Tony Evers' budget proposal. What's going on from in terms of the budget? Maybe you might start with briefly the big picture, and then there's a lot of items that are really pocketbook items and tax implication items in this budget, and some things that are in the budget that really don't have much to do with budgets usually anyway, as the Legislative Committee has pointed out, the Legislative Bureau has pointed out. So why don't you go into that and give us that first view, please?
Well, it's probably a little bit about the process. I think most people have no clue on how the budget works. The governor talks to his secretaries and the people that are the department heads from the different areas, the DNR, Department of Administration, universities, all those different DOT, and all those different department heads bring forward what their wish list is, what they would like to see come in and flow into their area so they can accomplish what their goals are. And then the governor crafts his budget, and of course a lot of times policies get stuffed into budgets. And in this case, no different than any other governor from either side of the aisle, this is what they work to do. So it's the governor's responsibility to put that forward so we have some place that we can start talking about with where we think the needs are going to be. And then what ends up happening is it comes to the legislature, and then the legislature looks at it, and they decide what the budget is going to be. It's not the governor who decides it. It's the legislature that controls the purse strings, and they're the ones that actually control the budget itself. Now, unlike at the federal level, if our budget isn't signed by the 1st of July, when it should be, all that happens is we continue at what the previous rates of spending were for programs and those things. Things don't just stop like they do at the federal level because they're not funded. Ours allows us to continue on until we get a balanced budget because we're required to do that. So once we get it over by us in to the legislature, both houses work together to craft a budget. The first thing we do, and this is no different with having a Democrat as the governor or a Republican as the governor in the past, we have taken the governor's budgets and basically stripped out the policy, things that had really things that were just kind of stuffed into the budget because maybe somebody didn't want to write a bill for them. Because maybe it wouldn't go through where there were maybe one-time issues, something like that. Well, we pull all those things out, and then as we go through the process, some of those policy things may get put back in, or they will be recommended for separate pieces of legislation to be brought to the floor to be debated, and many of them should be because there are some pretty intensive policy issues. So once we get to that point where we make that determination that we've got a base, and we've decided that as a legislature we are going to start with a base budget with, and that means that at what our spending levels are right now, and then we're going to look at what areas we believe need to be increased and what programs might need to be enacted or continued and sustained. So we're just in the beginning of that process. They started with hearings around the state to kind of get input from our communities and citizens, and now it goes through the Joint Finance Committee, which means we have members from the Assembly and from the Senate who debate and determine what is going to go into the budget. And so, like, I do not sit on Joint Finance as a member of Joint Finance, so I have a budget buddy, and mine is Senator Felczkowski, who serves on that committee. She has four or five senators that she sits with, and we talk about areas of the budget that might concern southeastern Wisconsin, as an example. And so then she tells us where we're at with what areas of the budget they're going to be talking on during that week. And if we have concerns about that, we can bring those to her, and she can bring concerns to us, so we get this input.
Well, people have their hair on fire about, expanding Medicaid and restoring union rights and modernizing the unemployment insurance system and raising the minimum wage, creating automatic voter registration, eliminating the 1 week waiting period for unemployment benefits. And the public record is that all of those things have already been stripped out. So, what about the real issues here that people are reading about in the newspapers and on the air?
So the governor put all those things back in and wants to reverse all of those things that occurred in prior legislatures. He wants to put the right to work back in. He wants to strip that out. He wants to repeal Act 10. He wants to increase increase taxes by about almost $1.3 billion, over and above all the other money that's coming in, both in, I mean, just $5.3 billion federal dollars that are flowing to our state, in addition to the about $2.5 billion we'll have that will be available to pay our bills during the next biennium. So he wants to raise our taxes even more, increase property taxes, and that's just not something that we agree with philosophically, that we have to just raise taxes on everything. So, I mean, you're talking about a lot of different areas that we could talk about probably for hours. We are addressing those, though, and I think the big thing is that we're having discussions about those. We caucus once a week, and I know the Democrats also caucus on a regular basis to talk about areas of issue, as do the members on the Joint Finance Committee that are from the other side of the aisle, both in the Senate and in the Assembly. They also caucus together, as the Joint Finance members do, and talk about what items are coming up for approval to be put into the budget. And then there's a vote taken by the Joint Finance Committee to whether or not that's
going to go into the budget. So are all these things settled then that have been in the papers as being eliminated and people are talking about now? Can they be reintroduced later in the session, Senator Van Garde?
Well, repealing Act 10 and those things, those aren't going to happen. I can tell you that right now, because we control from the Republican side, we have the majority and control that part, you know, as the majority in both the Senate and the Assembly. So that's not going to happen. That won't happen as a piece of law, and that will not be put into the budget. And the governor can't add that into the budget after the fact, because we're going to bring the budget to the governor. He can veto it. He can line item veto things in the budget if there's money assigned to it. There's some things he can do and can't do with his veto pen. So it should be where we work together on this, but I have to say that this governor has not been a governor that's been accessible and that has sat down and talked with the legislature. And I've had occasions that I've sat down with him and talked with him for a couple hours just on the policing reforms on the phone. We talked and we went through things. So it doesn't mean it can't happen. It's just that just seems like there's not a desire to have that conversation. And
is there anything in this budget that will put money into people's pockets in southeastern Wisconsin that'll improve their way of life? Is there anything like that in this budget that people can look to as a ray of hope right now?
Remember this,
the inflation that's going on. I think people are really concerned about money in their pocket right now.
Sure, and for the most part, everybody has money flowing into their pocket. If they're on unemployment, they have all kinds of money coming in from the federal government. They have all these other subsidies to the point where we have workers wanted signs everywhere in the state, not just down here where there's help wanted signs. People don't want to go back to work because they have this big windfall of federal money coming in addition to their unemployment money, you know, without requirements for doing job searches. So we have all of these jobs that are available, but people don't want to work because they make more money not working than working. So that creates a little bit of a problem. So we got to work through that and kind of get people back out there where they get engaged, and we get through the mentality that, you know, we're going to just kind of sit back and wait for everything to happen. Because I think it's a lot better, healthier environment when we have people back to work and actually earning something and actually feeling like they're accomplishing something, because I don't think it's good to be sitting at home all the time either.
All right. Well, why don't we move on to from the budget to election laws, which is, if nothing is topic A besides money, it's election laws right now in this country and in this state. State Senator Weingard, tell us about the election laws that the legislature, particularly those that are being advocated by the Republican Party, are likely to be like, and how that will impact voters in your district.
Well, there's actually quite a few different changes that they are looking at and clarifications. We had issues with the last election where we had clerks municipal clerks that were anticipating or interpreting statute for what could and couldn't be done with balloting and curing ballots, being able to accept ballots with somebody who is considered to be quote-unquote indefinitely confined, and what that process was for requiring IDs or not requiring IDs. So there were challenges to what the law said and what the interpretation was by the guidance given by the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And so there's some legislation that's in the works now to clarify that, in a lot of these cases, the clerks overstepped what their authority was with how they approached the application of that law. So there's clarification with that that's going to be coming out. It's in the process right now. They're working on a bill that will address many of those issues, drop boxes and ballot.
As I understand it, on that point, the issue isn't that there was any real amount of fraud uncovered in the last election, but that it's a problem of clarity and that needs to be patched up regardless.
Well, I
noted
cases,
with interest that you have third-party mailing services involved in returning ballots. You want to talk about that? That seems like a positive step.
So I'm sure you're probably referring to FedEx and UPS.
Yes.
There is a piece of legislation right now that they're looking at that would allow that if the individual wants to return their ballot, they would be able to do so by one of those couriers as opposed to just dropping it in the mail, because we saw the problems we have with the mail system, and people, I think, lost confidence in that their ballot was actually going to make it there on time and intact. And I think that FedEx and UPS do a pretty good job of getting it there and keeping track of things. Not that the post office doesn't, but I think they've been the focal point of a lot of errors. And I know personally, there's a concern about limiting the amount of access to people being able to vote. It's absolutely ridiculous that they say we're trying to stop people from having the ability to come and vote. When I started voting when I was 18, you had one day to vote, and you could vote absentee if you could show a reason. So if I was going to be out of town or broken a leg or broken arm in the hospital, I could get an absentee ballot. Now we allow for absentee ballots, way prior to the election. We allow for in-person voting 14 days before the election. We allow for same-day registration where they didn't allow that before. I think we have done just about everything to allow for that access.
All right, I think we understand your position on that. We're going to run out of time, and I don't want to leave without talking about a couple other issues briefly. What about redistricting, Senator Von Gard? The Kenosha News this past week has advocated for looking at the Iowa model of totally independent commission doing the redistricting and getting away from the political parties controlling it. What's your position?
Sure. Well, I think that it works, I think, the way it's supposed to when we have the legislature doing it. We did this. It started where it was nonpartisan group of people, then a partisan group of people. Then we went back to the GAB issues, and then we went back to a partisan group where we have three of one party and three of another party. That's what we currently have with the Elections Commission. And the voting, as far as establishing districting, when you look at the number of individuals that have moved throughout our state, they're no longer concentrated in one spot, with the exception of maybe there are major urban areas. I don't know how you would divide those out without, as they call it, quote-unquote, gerrymandering, which is nothing like what the original gerrymandering definition actually was, where, like they do down in Chicago. But when you look at this the way it is, the Supreme Court ruled that it's one person, one vote, small and contiguous districts, and you don't disenfranchise any group of people. Or we had that where there was a challenge to the last map. It went to the court, and I think the courts have been involved in just about all of the prior times maps have been drawn, no matter who drew them. But the thing was, the court looked at it and said, this has been drawn within the guidelines that are there by the Constitution, by the Supreme Court ruling, with the exception of one line that was, I think, up in Milwaukee County, South Milwaukee, where they had, it was a Hispanic area, and they had to move that line by like two blocks or something so that there was a, I mean, that's what it was. And so they did that, they corrected it, and the court was good with that.
You don't foresee any change in the method of redistricting for the immediate future?
I don't. And okay. If the governor doesn't like it, if the governor doesn't like it and vetoes it, and we don't have the ability to override the veto, it'll go to the court, and the court's going to look at it, and they're going to apply those principles of finding that the Supreme Court has put in play for what is a valid valid consideration. It's one person, one vote.
I'd like to move on.
You can't tell me in my district that I have a specific number of people within one block, one square block, that are all Republican or all Democrat. I mean, I have all kinds of people in my district here of both sides, and most people don't even identify as a Republican or Democrat anymore because they're embarrassed to. They identify as being independent.
Senator Weingart, I want to ask on behalf of our listeners what you foresee. There's a lot of public safety and policing legislation that's coming before the Senate and the Assembly. Do you foresee any progress in transparency in policing and maybe rethinking public safety?
Well, we passed four bills yesterday that were bills that I brought forward with Senator Lena Taylor, who's on the other side of the aisle. We've been working on it for several years, Lena, myself, and Senator Darling. And we passed four pieces of legislation yesterday that dealt with police and fire commissions of Class 1 cities, Milwaukee, of transparency and reporting of statistics and crime data so that we could apply that to training issues and those types of things, allowing for full disclosure of backgrounds on officers that are applying for jobs so you can't steal an employment record with bad conduct, those types of things. And then we have four more pieces of legislation that will be coming up in June that will deal with a crisis review team of any officer-involved critical incidents where there's death or great bodily harm to either an officer or a citizen. That'll be coming up in June, along with three other ones. And then we have about eight bills that were developed by the task force over in the Assembly that were different than the bills we were working on with Assembly and with Senator involvement with the eight bills that I and Lena brought forward. They were additional by the task force that we're bringing forward and leading on over in the Senate. Those will be coming up in June, too. So I see a lot of progress for transparency and accountability and public community involvement in the process, because that's a huge area that I think we see things on TV and we think that always applies here. People have to remember 99% of our officers do it right, and the 1% of bad actors don't need to be there.
Wisconsin is actually
at the tip of the spear, and we actually set the model for the rest of the country when it comes to training and doing
Thank
it right you. Here. So we need to
Thank
continue
you very
to
much.
Do that.
Appreciate your insights, State Senator Van Weingart from the 21st State Senate District, representing a good portion of our Signal area. And now we turn to State Senator Bob Wirch, who represents the State Senate District 22. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show.
Now, we're recording this segment with Senator Wirch on Thursday, the 13th of this week, in case something happens before we run this on the air. Now, Senator Wirch, let's start out by the talking about the budget. We've talked with Senator Van Weingart about the budget. I'd like you to talk about the budget, what you think is important in the budget that's before the Senate now and will be in the coming days and weeks probably. And if you could relate these policy issues to the people in your district, that would be really, I think, helpful to our listeners. But let's start by reminding our listeners where the boundaries are for the district, because, as you know, they've been redrawn not that long ago.
Yeah, the 22nd district that I represent is basically the city of Kenosha, city of Racine, and the area, Mount Pleasant, and areas in between. So I have an urban district.
Senator Wirch, what are the policies in the budget that are you concerned about and want to see enacted for the people of your district?
Well, I'm deeply disappointed in the Republican majority so far. They've taken a lot of good issues that were presented by the governor out of the budget. And let me just talk about some of them. Medicaid expansion. This is a common sense way of offering more health care, 90,000 people in our state, and the federal government pays for it. And yet the Republicans took that out of the budget. Now, how crazy is this? Well, 38 states have taken Medicaid expansion. We're one of 12 that's turned it down. And, you know, Wisconsin is a donor state, meaning that we send a lot more money to the federal government than we get. In fact, we are 43rd in the country in getting federal money, and I'm sure these right-wingers wouldn't be happy unless we were 50th. So I'm deeply disappointed with them taking that out of the budget. By the way, when the people were given a chance to vote on this issue, even in deep red Republican states like Oklahoma and Missouri, the people voted to take Medicaid expansion. The same thing, Governor, you know, our minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Now, there's 26 states higher than Wisconsin, and the governor put a sensible increase into the budget. The Republicans took it out. Once again, they put right-wing ideology in favor of what the people want. You know, even in Florida went decisively for Donald Trump. The people voted in referendum for a $15 minimum wage. So I was very disappointed in those areas of the budget that the Republicans simply took out. Now, Republicans will tell you, oh, that's policy. It shouldn't be in the budget. But in fact, when Democrats bring up those issues, the Republicans refuse either to give it a public hearing or simply to bring it up for a vote. And so I think we're off to a bad start with Republicans taking those things out of the budget. And hopefully that we can get some public pressure on them to bring some of those issues up when the budget comes to the floor of the Assembly and the Senate probably next month.
Senator, the word is, you know, in the critics of raising the minimum wage, for example, and taking a lot of other aid from the federal government and passing it on to the people, is that the problem is people won't go to work because they're getting paid to stay home, and so they're not going to go back to work until we make them as poor as possible, basically. Is that cynical? Is that accurate? I mean, there are business people who are saying, people won't come to work for me. What should we do? We've got to stop sending them these checks. What about the people you talk to?
Well, you know, Costco is in Kenosha, and they pay their employees $23 an hour and give them health insurance. They don't have any trouble getting employees out there. So it depends what you pay for people. Raise the minimum wage if you want people to work. I think that is a common sense solution, and pay a little more money and benefits, and then you'll get workers.
What are the other issues in the budget that are important to you that you're concerned about getting through?
Well, clearly, I'm concerned about the stewardship program. The Republicans have cut back money for stewardship. Stewardship program is to buy land when it suddenly becomes available in the state for parks. And also the money is used for local government to establish parks or update their parks, stuff like that. And I tell the Republicans, look, this is good, big business. People don't come to Wisconsin Tourism to see our subdivisions. They come to see our state parks. They come to kayak. They come to hike. They come to picnic. They come to fish and hunt. And so it's important. Yet the Republicans have slashed this money. And the original stewardship money was put in when we had more compromise in government, meaning Governor Warren Knowles, a Republican, and Gaylord Nelson, a Democrat, move to set up the stewardship funds. But once again, it's been severely slashed by Republicans, and I hope that we can get some more money in before the budget is done.
Some of the issues that were brought up that are important were modernizing the unemployment system of the state, getting rid of the Act 10 collective bargaining restrictions, and eliminating the one-week waiting period for unemployment benefits and increasing the weekly benefits for unemployment insurance. What's your position on those issues, Senator?
Well, let's talk about unemployment compensation. When we had our terrible pandemic recession, when it hit, a lot of people were thrown out of work, and they had trouble getting their money from the state. Now, the Republicans blame the governor for the money not getting out to people who lost their jobs. But in fact, I think it was their fault, meaning that, my goodness, I think it was back in 2014 under Scott Walker, there was an audit that said, hey, fix our unemployment system. We have old computers. Well, Republicans didn't want to spend the money. And so people were forced to use 50-year-old computers to process the claims, and therefore that was a big problem in getting out the checks in a speedy manner. So, the governor has pushed for that too, and he wanted a special session to deal with that problem. All the Republicans gaveled in and gaveled out in about 1 minute and just kind of forgot about the special session. And so there's a tendency under Scott Walker to simply avoid programs. Hey, keep the taxes down, we'll all get reelected. And that has led to our roads having a D rating in our state, and of course, lack of updated computers in getting money out to people that were laid off. And so it's frustrating because these Republicans, it didn't used to be this way. We had Republicans that wanted to do what was best for the people of the state, and they were willing to compromise. That's the way it was under Tommy Thompson. But there's been a hard turn to the right, and penny wise and pound foolish for taking care of our state.
Now, the Act 10 repeal in all or in part has been stripped out of the current discussions by the Republicans, partly on the basis that it's policy and doesn't belong in the budget. What do you feel about that? Is it policy or is it budget?
Well, when Republicans have put policy in the budget before, too. This is another one of those issues that if it's brought up as legislation, Republicans refuse to give it a hearing. And then when it's put in the budget, they say, no, that's policy. It shouldn't be in the budget. So that's frustrating, and that's not the way it should be.
So your position is that you're damned if you do and damned if you don't? Is that it?
Exactly, and I believe that workers should have the right for collective bargaining, and they went overboard with Act 10. Could there have been changes on a smaller manner that would have made a big difference? Yes, but they went overboard on Act 10.
What about that waiting period for unemployment benefits to eliminate that one-week waiting period? Is that a good idea?
No, it isn't. There should not be a one-week waiting period. We get back to the same theme. Whether it's a waiting week or the minimum wage, we have a real problem of income inequality in this country, and the Republicans only make the problem worse. It's bad enough you're laid off and you lose your job, but then to have that week of lag time before the unemployment comes in, there's a 40 million people in this country living below the poverty level. And so clearly, we should be helping those people, not simply getting more tax cuts for the rich the way the Republicans like to do.
All right, let's move on. I want to cover a few more topics, Senator Wirch. What about the election laws that are before the Senate right now? What's good, what's bad about that, the election law changes? One good thing looks like is that I could use UPS or FedEx to return my ballot.
Yeah, well, the ones I've looked at, it just worries me. Look, I love this country, and I'm a big believer in democracy, and democracy works best when you get as many people as possible voting. And yet around the country, you've seen the Republicans being sore losers. after losing the presidential election. They did pretty good on the local and state, but they lost the presidential. So they're immediately putting in bills to make it more difficult for people to vote. And, we had this discussion on the floor of the Senate. It would be different if they had evidence to say, oh, my God, there was fraud here or there was fraud there. They have no evidence. They just, under the guise of better government, they're simply putting more obstacles in the way of getting people to vote. I mean, Madison was had an idea to accept people's votes out in a park. I thought it was a good idea. Anything to get people involved in democracy. Nope. They want a special legislation to deny that. You know, this is another example of big government Republicans telling local people what to do. You know, when the Republicans run for election, they say, oh, I'm against taxes, I'm for small government. Yet, you know, there's hundreds of bills they've passed to take away rights from local government, whether it's counties, cities, school boards, whatever. And I just don't think that's right. I was a duly elected county board supervisor, and I think that the best government is closest to the people. That's local government. So too much voter suppression. Thank goodness we have a governor who will veto those measures.
What about the related question of redistricting? You know, the Kenosha News had a very interesting opinion piece just recently about taking a look at the way Iowa does redistricting with a totally non-political independent commission instead of the system we've got. Where do you stand on redistricting?
Well, I don't know. I seldom agree with the editors of the Kenosha News, but I agreed with them on that one. Yes, we need to get first of all, Republicans have wasted a lot of money on this crooked map that we have in place now, paying hundreds of dollars an hour to high-priced lawyers, then having to defend this crooked map in court. I am in favor of the Iowa way of doing it. Get the map making out of the hands of the partisan politicians and let an independent third party do it. In fact, I was a co-sponsor of that legislation when it came up, but once again, our Republicans wouldn't give it a hearing. So, I can't say that this is just Republicans. Democrats have done it in other states too, but the majority party loves power, and they certainly don't want to let go of power, and that's why they don't want the Iowa fair method of making up our maps.
Public safety and policing are the same general subject, but there are really distinct differences between the two subjects of public safety and policing. And there's a lot of legislation being proposed now in both houses of the legislature in Madison. Senator Wirch, would you talk for a little bit about where you think we should be going in reimagining what we mean by public safety for the third decade of the 21st century, and also talk about the subject of policing and reexamining how we do our policing? Or is everything perfect?
Oh, no, it's certainly not perfect. Let me let me emphasize this. Policing is very difficult, and it's at times you have to make split-second decisions, and certainly there's a lot of excellent police men and women out there to protect our community. But let me talk about a bill on a more positive note that came up in front of the Senate that passed unanimously. All the Democrats voted for it, and the Republicans voted for it. And it had to do with a wonderful model in Racine, where they set up a number of years ago cop houses out in the district to get the police closer to the people. You know, there used to be a saying many years ago in Racine that the police rode around with the windows up and the heater on in the winter, and in the summer they rode around with the windows up and the air conditioner on in the summer. They never saw them unless there was a crisis. Well, cop houses, they were houses, small houses built around Racine where people could check in with a parole and probation agent. Mentors from Gateway would work for young kids. There could be community meetings. And there was a policeman or policewoman who would work out of one of those houses. And a certain time, the cops would walk the beat so that the community could talk to and see the police. And it's been a wonderful success in Racine. And that's what the bill was about, that we were promoting the concept of cop houses around the state. Now, of course, the Republicans are frugal. They didn't put any money in the bill, but I hope we can get that later on. We just have to get the police back to being a part of the community, to have mutual trust between the police and the community. And I think we have to get the wonderful work of Racine spread out around the state. I think that is part of the answer.
What about the Walworth County experiment with embedding social workers in with the police response teams?
I think that's a good idea. You know, you can't have it both ways. I mean, I'm certainly defunding the police is a foolish idea. I would not be for that. But let's think about this. We're asking the police to do too much. We're asking them to enforce the law, stop violence, and then, of course, deal with people with mental illness, deal with the homeless. And I think we could take part of the burden off the shoulders of the police by getting social service agencies to perhaps deal with the homeless out there. I know there's been some training in Racine and Kenosha to help the police and probation and parole deal with people with mental illness. But I just think that there is a role for social service agencies to care for some of these problems. And I think we need good negotiation between the police and local government to accomplish this.
There's been talk about having a independent police review commission in every city and municipality that's independent of the police and fire commissions to review policies, to plan and envision the future of policing and public safety, and to make sure that everything is done in as good a possible way for everyone concerned. Do you think that that's a fit subject for state legislation mandating independent review commissions?
Well, I'm not hung up on that. I think there's also room for initiating that on the local level with county boards and aldermen. Not everything has to be done in Madison, and different communities are out there. But clearly, we need better policing. We need better conduct in the communities, too. We need less violence out there. We need less shootings. We can't just put it all on the backs of the police that it's their fault. No, we have to look at cutting the amount of violence in our community, and I think that that is something that we should be working on, and we should be working on police training that emphasizes de-escalation of incidents out there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to thank our guests today, representing most of our listeners in our broadcast area here of WGTD Public Radio, State Senator Van Wongard from District 21 and State Senator Bob Wirch from District 22. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, urging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.